Templeton woman before me. It was late by the time I got home and showered the arson off me. I collapsed on my king-size bed and blew out a long breath. The lamp on my nightstand cast a quiet glow on my copy of The Midnight Library. I wondered if she was reading right now, or if maybe, just maybe, she was lying in her bed thinking of me. I doubted it. Every time I saw Sloane, she looked both surprised and disappointed to realize I still existed. I shouldn't be the only one losing sleep. I picked up my phone. It took me a minute to settle on the right approach. I scrolled through my contacts, found the one I was looking for, and sent it off. When the message wasn't immediately read, I threw the phone onto the bedspread next to me and covered my face with my hands. I was an idiot. A weak, undisciplined idiot. Just because we'd managed to share a civil lunch together didn't mean... The phone vibrated against the plush bedspread. I dove for it. Sloane, what did you just send me?
Me. The contact information for an attorney who specializes in appeals. She's expecting your call tomorrow. You're welcome.
I saw three dots appear, then disappear. I stared at the screen, willing them to reappear. 30 seconds later, they did.
Sloane, thanks.
It took that much effort for her to type one word to me. What was I even doing? I could have had an assistant send her the information. Hell, I could have had an assistant give the information to Lena, who actually worked in my office. I didn't need to be texting Sloane at... I swiveled to glare at the clock. It was almost midnight. Disgusted with myself, I tossed my phone on the nightstand and stacked my hands under my head. The phone vibrated again. I pulled a neck muscle, pouncing on it.
Sloane. Lena told me what happened to Holly today. Is she okay?
Rubbing my neck, I debated waiting to respond, then decided I was too tired to play games.
Me. Everyone is fine.
Sloane.
Are you okay?
Was I? I didn't feel okay. I felt like things were unspooling, slipping away from my fingers. I'd made a career of foreseeing every contingency, every play, yet I'd missed this one. What else was I missing? And why was I slipping now?
Me. I'm fine.
Sloane. My phone has this cool bullshit detector app, and that sorry wrong answer buzzer noise just went off. It scared the cat.
Me. I'm fine. Just tired.
Sloane. You do know it's not your job to protect everyone from everything, don't you? But it was my job to protect my people from my actions and the consequences of those actions.
Me. I saw your mother tonight.
No dots appeared. I'd pushed too far. Or she'd fallen asleep. I was just dumping my phone on the nightstand again when it rang.
What?
You really need to work on your phone etiquette.
Sloane's voice was husky in my ear.
It made me think of those fleeting perfect moments from before. Falling asleep next to her on a pile of pillows in a nice bedroom in a safe house. I hated that my body so viscerally remembered those times.
How's she doing?
She's holding up, I said, wincing at the pain in my neck as I adjusted the pillows behind me the way teenage Sloane had.
Maeve and I call her every day, but it's hard to tell if she's hiding stuff from us.
She put the ashes on top of the refrigerator, I told her. Sloane let out a soft, sad laugh.
He'd like that.
He would, I agreed. She was quiet for a long beat, and I worried she was about to hang up.
So did you go beat the crap out of whoever ran Holly off the road?
She asked.
Now, why would I do that? Because you're you?
Let's just say they won't be running anyone off the road anytime soon, I told her.
Nash told me that you kicked Jonah Bluth's ass at football practice because he was talking shit about me in high school.
Nash had a big mouth to go along with that shiny badge. I have no recollection. Sloane's wrong answer buzzer almost made me smile.
So what did you not do to these guys?
Nolan and I made sure they didn't have a vehicle to run anyone off the road with and that the local police knew where to look when Holly reported the incident.
Look at you and Nolan becoming buddy guys. Did you go for a buddy guy beer afterward?
I'd actually had a scotch to Nolan's Coors Light. Don't be ridiculous. I wondered what she was wearing. If she was in bed, or if she was curled up on the couch, lipstick still on, book in her lap. My cock stirred. I pressed the palm of my hand to my groin. I didn't get spontaneous erections unless I was near her. I was an adult in control of his baser instincts. The husky phone voice of the woman who had nearly destroyed me shouldn't have this effect on me. So, you cleaned up the mess, got back at the bad guy. Now what?
What do you mean? I repeated.
Was it just Sloane's voice that had me thickening with arousal? Or was this a symptom of something else? Of me losing control, my edge? Me sending a message to Anthony Hugo wasn't going to stop him from making more moves. I wanted him to, because sooner or later he'd slip up, and I'd exploit that mistake to beat him.
I can practically hear the fury dripping off your syllables, big guy. Someone messed with one of your employees. You handled it. But how do you blow off steam when justice doesn't take away the mad?
I scoffed. I don't need to blow off steam. Personally, I'm a fan of sweaty, dirty sex. It always seems to set the world right again, Sloane said cheerfully.
You should try it sometime.
A strangled sound tore free from my throat. My cock pulsed, and I pressed my palm over it, hoping to suffocate the arousal. I wasn't going to sit here having a conversation on the phone with a woman and jerk off, even if that woman was Sloane. She laughed softly.
Only messing with you, Lucifer.
But I could picture her sprawled beneath me, her hair fanned over a pillow like a halo, those milky thighs locked around my hips, her breasts half an inch from heaving out of one of those useless tops with the spaghetti straps. Oh, so you don't actually enjoy sweaty, dirty sex? I shot back.
Wouldn't you like to know?
She all but purred the words in my ear. I didn't know what the right move was, what tactic I should employ, because I couldn't have what I wanted. I didn't want what I wanted. Why are you still awake? I asked gruffly.
Some pain in the ass wouldn't stop texting me, she said lightly.
I could hear the smile in her voice, could picture it in my mind. That slow, sultry curve of her lips, usually reserved for anyone who wasn't me. This was a mistake. I was making another mistake. I couldn't stop myself. Sloane was the bad habit I couldn't quit.
You should go to bed, I said. Geez, maybe you should take a class in how to talk to people without sounding like an ass.
I don't have time for pillow talk with you.
That settles it. My next book club selection is going to be something about Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Maybe then I'll understand why you go from almost human to Lucifer between two sentences.
It was a dance we'd been locked into for years. Every time one of us showed a side that was a little too human, the other managed to strike. Walls were rebuilt, animosity reinforced. We kept relearning the same lesson over and over again, but it never stuck. We weren't good for each other. I wasn't good for her, and I could never trust a woman who had so thoroughly betrayed me. Don't waste your time thinking about me. I don't waste any of mine on you, I told her. With her gasp ringing in my ear, I disconnected the call, switched off the light, and lay in the dark, hating myself.
18. Ruins of the Past. Sloane. I dragged the recycling bin up the short stretch of concrete around Lucian's Range Rover and plunked it down in front of his garage door. It was a dark, damp Saturday evening. It had been one of those days where one thing went wrong, followed by everything else spiraling out of control. The computers in the library had crashed for over an hour. My shipment of paperbacks for the Valentine's Day author signing arrived missing their covers, and I'd squeezed in a fourth blind date in hopes that bearded Byron 223 would turn out to be better than my last three matches. He was not. Bearded Byron was neither bearded nor a fan of Lord Byron. He'd shown up late and drunk, and in the middle of me telling him it wasn't going to work out, he took a phone call from his current girlfriend and told her he was at the gym. He was so not better than the last three that I had plans to curl up tonight by the fire with the sperm bank's website. If I couldn't find a date with future husband potential, maybe I'd have better luck with a child. To add to my already bad mood, I'd spent the past few days ruminating about Lucian. Lucian having dinner with my mom. Lucian texting me from bed. Lucian generously giving his employee a brand new SUV. Lucian almost kissing me in his office. Lucian working with the FBI to take down one of the most dangerous criminals in the Mid-Atlantic region area. Lucian naked, crooking his finger at me. That last one hit me in the shower yesterday after I spied his Range Rover in the driveway, then again right before bed. And when I woke up, I liked it better when I only occasionally remembered that the man existed. We were on a never-ending roller coaster of insults, sexual awareness, bitterness, and flirtation, and it was time to put an end to it. I wanted to get off this ride so I could focus my energy on what I actually wanted, which was not Lucian Rollins. I marched up the walkway to his front door, finger poised to jab his doorbell, when the door swung open. "What?" Lucian demanded. He was missing a jacket, tie, and shoes, but was still dressed in tailored trousers and an Oxford with his sleeves rolled to the elbows. His socks were a fancy plaid pattern. He looked like he'd just strolled off the pages of Rich Guy Weekend magazine. He also looked annoyed, tired, and obnoxiously sexy. A woman who didn't know what a pain in the ass he was would have been tempted to shoo him back inside with promises of hot homemade soup and a night of forgetting his troubles. But Lucian Rollins didn't deserve homemade soup. "I'm sure you're used to having your butler drag your trash bins back inside in the city, but around here, we do it ourselves," I announced.
"Why would I need a butler when I have an overbearing neighbor who can't seem to remember to put on a fucking coat?"
he shot back. "I don't think you should be working with the FBI," I snapped, going with the first item on my mental list of problems that I had with him. Well, the first problem that didn't involve my inconvenient physical attraction to him. With an eye roll, he reached out, fisted his hand in the front of my sweatshirt, and pulled me inside.
"Excuse me, didn't anyone ever tell you kidnapping women on your doorstep is rude?"
"Didn't anyone tell you screaming shrewishly about private business in public places is dangerous?"
I stuffed my hands into the pocket of my hoodie.
"I'll give you the shrewish part, but I did not scream."
"How generous of you."
"I stand by my statement," I said, looking around. The TV in the living room was on to some kind of financial news report. There was an empty bowl and an open laptop on the ottoman. Flames danced cozily in the fireplace. Yet the room still managed to feel somber, lonely even. Gray walls, gray couch, scratchy-looking ivory pillows. It felt soulless. Except for the music. I frowned. "Is that Shania Twain?" Swearing under his breath, Lucian hit a button on his phone and the music stopped.
"We're not discussing the FBI, Anthony Hugo, or my personal business, so unless there's another topic you'd care to yell at me about, you can show yourself out."
I blew out a breath.
"Thank you for the referral to the attorney," I said. "I had a call with her yesterday and sent her everything I had on Mary Louise."
"So you came to yell at me and thank me?"
he asked, sounding slightly less irritated. I shrugged. "I'm a complicated woman."
"Noted. Now if you're done shrewing, I'd like to enjoy my house without you in it."
"I don't think that's a word. And I'm not leaving until you hear me out. I've been thinking about this a lot."
He smirked.
"You've been thinking about me? Shouldn't you be too busy finding Mr. Wright to give me a passing thought?"
I glared at him. "I've got a big brain, Lucifer. There's room for lots of stuff up there."
"Have you found him?"
he asked.
I didn't quite suppress the shudder that rolled up my spine as my recent dating shenanigans tap-danced onto center stage in my mind. "Not yet," I said with forced positivity. "I didn't come to talk about my dating life."
"Then why did you come?"
he pressed, looking vaguely amused. "To yell at you about the trash bins. Weren't you listening?"
"You've been on how many dates and still haven't found a suitable candidate?"
he asked. My eyes narrowed. "Listen, Rollins, this isn't hiring an employee to fetch you coffee and smoothies made from the blood of puppies. Finding your life partner should be... disheartening, physically painful, excruciatingly depressing. Challenging," I said out loud. He crossed his arms and leaned against the cased opening to the living room.
"Elaborate."
"I'm not discussing my dating life with you."
"There's nothing to be ashamed of. I'm sure them not calling you back is a them thing and not a you thing."
"It's not them ghosting me." "Well, except for that one guy, but that was more literal ghosting. Do you even know what ghosting is?"
"I work with a 22-year-old who insists on talking all the time about things I don't care about. Not only do I know what ghosting is, I could name all the Kardashians if pressed."
"Is she okay? Holly, I mean."
"She's fine," he said curtly.
"I was thinking about it. Have you considered that the men who chased her..."
"Back to the ghosting,"
he insisted. I shook my head. "Nope." Those cool gray eyes went shrewd.
"I'll give you an entire Stucky's soft pretzel if you tell me."
I scoffed. "You can't just bribe me with food." That was a lie. Stucky's pretzels were the size of my face and irresistibly flaky.
"It's cinnamon and sugar, with caramel sauce," he added.
"Damn it! My favorite." I glared at him. He stared back. The staring contest lasted until my stomach growled like a damn traitor. I'd missed lunch during the computer fiasco and hadn't gotten around to dinner yet. "Fine," I conceded. "But I'm only telling you because you'll hear about it anyway in our weird little incestuous group of big mouths." Steph, Naomi, and Lena had already been thoroughly entertained by the story.
"I'm all ears," Lucian said.
"Uh-uh. First, I want to see the pretzel." A hint of amusement played across his lips. I wondered how he kept his beard trimmed so neatly. Did he have a special razor, or did he have a beard guy who came to his house every other day?
"Come on, then,"
he said, heading in the direction of the kitchen, his socked feet making no noise as he walked. I had a feeling I was going to regret this, but at least I'd get a pretzel out of it. Just like the living room, the kitchen and dining area were ruthlessly clean, as if the rooms had just been sanitized or were only staged to make it look as if someone lived there. I wondered what the inside of his refrigerator looked like. Would I find expired jars of mustard like in everyone else's kitchen, or would there be more ruthless sterility? Did vegetables dare rot in Lucian's crisper drawer? He flipped the lid on a pink bakery box and angled it my way. My mouth watered. There was only one pretzel. "Even though you're you and I'm me, I can't take your last pretzel. Why do you even have this? Don't you subsist on a diet of egg whites and unicorn hoof?" The man took discipline to a whole new annoying level.
"I'm willing to part with it in exchange for the story of the man who ghosted Sloane Walton."
"You make it sound like a children's book."
"You're stalling,"
he said, getting a plate out of the cabinet. I really wanted that pretzel. "Fine. But let's split the pretzel. I hope to be getting naked for a stranger soon, and I need to be in decent, non-baked good shape." Wordlessly, he produced a second plate, then cut the doughy goodness into two equal halves. I salivated as he put both plates in the microwave.
"Talk."
"Okay, fine." I planted myself on one of the stools he had parked under the peninsula. So I match with this guy named Gary. According to his profile, he's a pediatric nurse who enjoys reading, hiking, and spending time with his nieces and nephews.
Clearly he's an asshole,
Lucian teased. I ignored the jab and continued. He sounds normal in his messages, so I agree to dinner. After the last fiasco that you had a front row seat to, Nash and Lena decided to go along as backup. They got a table near us, and small talk commences. He seems nice enough, but when I ask him about his job, he doesn't seem to know anything about hospitals or nursing or children. He keeps asking me stuff like, how much money does a librarian make, and what kind of car I have, and do I have any retirement savings? Lucian closed his eyes and pinched the bridge of his nose. The microwave dinged. He opened it, releasing the smell of cinnamony deliciousness. I'm definitely suspicious by this point, so I give Nash and Lena the sign, and they come running up and tell me my Uncle Horace just fell off a ladder, and they whisk me away. He put one of the plates in front of me and dug two forks out of the utensil drawer. I wasted no time yanking the lid off the caramel sauce and dipping my first bite in it. Anyway, we're on our way home, and Gary calls. I, of course, let it go to voicemail. Oh, my God, this is divine, I moaned as the flavors melted in my mouth. Lucian took a smaller, more dignified bite of his half.
What did Gary have to say?
I pulled out my phone. Listen for yourself. I scrolled through my voicemails and pushed play.
Hey, Sloane. This is Gary. I just wanted to check in and see how your uncle is. Oh my God! Ah!
His voice was replaced with the sound of a revving engine, squealing tires, and finally a spectacular crash. Then the sound of static filled the kitchen. Lucian shook his head.
You can't be serious.
Go on. I know you're dying to say it, I said, gesturing with my fork.
He's scamming you.
I held up a finger and pushed play on the next message.
Hey, this is Vic Verkman, a friend of Gary's. I don't know how to tell you this, but Gary was in a terrible accident last night. He's in a coma, and the hospital is threatening to unplug him unless someone pays his hospital bills. He keeps whispering your name.
Lucian put down his fork.
Vic Verkman's voice sounds a lot like Gary.
Oh, just wait, I said, playing the next message. Sloane, this is Mercedes, Gary's mom. I'm sorry to tell you that Gary passed away last night from injuries sustained in a car accident he had while worrying about you and your uncle. The funeral home is threatening to keep his body unless we pay them. I stopped the message and took another bite of soft pretzel. Lucian rolled his eyes.
Tell me you didn't send him money.
I grinned. I texted his mom back and asked her where I could send the check. She suggested I write it out to Gary Jessup and mail it to his home address so his estate could handle it.
He gave you his real name and address after he faked his own death?
Yep. It made it easy to report him to the app and track down his employment so I could send a funeral arrangement of flowers with my condolences to him there.
Where does he work?
Lucian asked, picking up his fork again. I swirled warm pretzel through the caramel puddle on the plate. For one of those skeezy debt collection places. You know the kind, they buy medical or mortgage debt for pennies on the dollar and then try to collect on it by harassing people. I think it was called Morgan Stern Credit Corporation. Lucian said nothing as he took another bite. He was eating standing up, leaning against the sink, the counter between us. What? No, you're so undesirable men fake their own deaths to get away from you jokes? I asked.
Too many punchlines. I froze, he said. Why are you subjecting yourself to this?
To spending time with you? I asked, coyly batting my eyelashes.
I know you're only here for the baked goods.
I savored my last bite and refrained from licking the drizzle of gooey goodness from the plate. I want a family. It's time. I got up and rounded the peninsula. Silently, Lucian slid to the side, allowing me access to the sink. I washed the plate and fork, then left them to dry.
You're serious about all this, aren't you?
He sounded baffled, and I glanced up at him. There wasn't enough space between us, which created an odd, barefoot intimacy. I think you, of all people, would understand. Haven't you ever made up your mind about something you wanted and then gone out and got it? Or in your case, coughed up a few million and bought yourself whatever it was you wanted? He nudged me out of the way, my body heating at the innocuous contact. I put a little distance between us and hopped up on the counter while he washed his dishes, then used the towel looped over the oven handle to dry both our plates before returning them to their respective homes. Meticulous, I noted. The man couldn't tolerate things out of place. He probably folded his socks before sex.
That's very pragmatic of you, he said.
I bristled from my perch. I can be pragmatic. He glanced my way, and I felt the heat from those molten silver eyes.
In many areas, yes, he conceded. But given your usual reading material, I would have expected you to prioritize romance.
What nonsense are you spouting now? I demanded.
You've been reading romance novels by the truckload since you were a teenager. You practically have Happily Ever After tattooed on your forehead.
I crossed my arms. Did I wish I could meet someone who would sweep me off my feet, like Naomi and Lena had? Yes. Was I more than a little jealous of their over-the-top sex lives and grand romances? Absolutely. Sometimes you have to stop waiting for something to happen and start making it happen, I said.
I don't believe you.
I don't care, I snapped back. His grin was devastating and fleeting. I examined my fingernails and feigned boredom. Just out of curiosity, what don't you believe?
You're not going to settle for a man just because he ticks off the potential father material box. That's not how you're wired.
Oh, and how exactly am I wired? He moved quickly, like a beast lunging for its prey. I found him standing between my knees, caging me in with his hands on the counter.
You're wired to want a man who's going to live up to every one of those heroes you read about. The ones who fight for their woman, who drag her off into dark corners because they can't stand not touching her a moment longer. The ones who would do anything for her. That's what you want.
His voice was a rough rasp, an invisible caress. Why did it feel so good, so thrilling to be this close to him? This is starting to feel like your office all over again, I warned. His eyes narrowed, but he didn't budge. He stayed where he was, almost touching me in a dozen places.
Don't settle, he said. You'll regret it for the rest of your life.
Are you seriously giving me love life advice right now?
I'm merely pointing out that you could be lining yourself up for more trouble by forcing things to happen instead of letting them unfold.
That's easy for you to say. You can have kids when you're 75.
No, I can't. I had a vasectomy.
My mouth fell open. What? When? Why? He pushed away from me and stood in the center of the room, looking supremely uncomfortable.
You should go,
he announced. But I was riveted. I mean, you don't have to tell me, even though I just spilled my guts to you about my very personal, humiliating dating life. Don't feel like you owe me anything.
I gave you a pretzel.
Half a pretzel, I pointed out. For a moment, I thought he was going to close down again like he always did. Then he gritted out a sigh.
I was in my 20s. There was a pregnancy scare with a girl who didn't matter. I already knew I had no intentions of ever starting a family, so I made sure it wouldn't happen.
Wow, that's a big decision to make when you're that young, I observed.
I haven't changed my mind, so you can stop looking at me like that.
Like what?
Like you pity me.
I snorted. I don't pity you, you gigantic oaf. I'm just surprised. I guess I always just assumed you were more calculating with your decisions. That seems like a knee-jerk reaction.
This conversation is annoying me. You should leave, he announced.
Lucian! All the aggravation, the frustration that roiled inside me came out in those two syllables.
What?
He asked quietly. Why do we keep getting on this roller coaster? I asked.
I always thought of it as more of a dance, he countered.
Roller coaster, dance, series of huge mistakes. What are we doing, Lucifer? He locked eyes with me, and I felt as if I was frozen to the spot.
We're holding on to something that doesn't exist anymore, he said flatly.
I absorbed the blow and sighed out a breath. How do we let go of something that doesn't exist? I asked.
If I figure it out, I'll let you know. In a letter. From my attorney.
My lips quirked. That was the magic of Lucian. I could hate him, and he could still make me smile. Did you ever want a family? I asked.
Once. A long time ago,
he said, his voice low. I bit my lip and tried to avoid the barrage of memories.
You should go, Pix.
You don't have to be like them, I told him. You're already better. I mean, besides your terrible personality, you'd do it better than they did. He was already shaking his head.
I invest my time in what matters most. I don't have any left over for a wife and kids. I'd only be putting them at risk.
I straightened. I talked to Nash about you working with the FBI.
Of course you did.
The roller coaster was inching its way up that first hill. You told me not to worry. You didn't say don't talk to your friend.
You haven't changed in the least, he snapped.
Actually, I'd gone up a cup size since I was 16, but that didn't feel relevant in this conversation. And you're a completely different person than you used to be, I pointed out.
I have work to do, and you're annoying me, he said.
I talked to Nash, your friend, and he isn't too thrilled about you becoming BFFs with the FBI. Nash's exact words had been something along the lines of, it gives me fucking heartburn.
I don't care.
Lucian's tone was just flippant enough it made me want to march into the living room, pick up one of the scratchy pillows, and hurl it at him. We both couldn't help but wonder if it was Anthony Hugo's men who went after Holly, I said.
It's none of your business. But if it was Hugo's men, then I just proved my point. I do things that get people close to me hurt,
he snapped, that beautiful facade cracking just enough for me to catch a glimpse beneath. Lucian, I said softly. He held up his hand.
Don't. I'd like you to go.
I crossed my arms. Not until you tell me where the investigation stands. Are you in danger? Are the rest of your employees taking precautions?
I'm not discussing this with you,
he said, and headed out of the kitchen. I followed him into the hall. You said the guy who sold Hugo the list turned up dead. Felix Metzer, right?
Lucian stopped with his hand on the doorknob.
How did you know that?
It's not that hard to search the news for dead bodies pulled out of the Potomac.
The news didn't identify him,
he countered. I'm a fucking librarian. I have literal resources.
You're not getting involved in this, Sloane.
His tone was icy and hard. I'm not asking to be involved. All I'm asking for is answers. Is the FBI close to making an arrest? Is Hugo going to retaliate again? And if so, are Lena and Nolan targets? If the guy who sold Duncan the list is dead, does that mean it's a dead end? Is the FBI looking into financial crimes because those carry more charges? It's not as sexy as convicting him for murdering people, but it's usually easier to prove.
This is none of your business. I am none of your business.
Just convince me that you're smarter and faster and more diabolical than some mob boss who's managed to operate the family business for 40 years without getting arrested once, then I'll leave you alone.
I don't have to convince you of anything except getting out of my house, Sloane.
He looked like he was edging past mad straight into fury. Look, since you don't seem to have a pack of family or friends giving you advice, you're stuck with me. Messing with Anthony Hugo is a bad idea. He'll retaliate. Let the FBI build their case and stay out of it.
I didn't know why it was so important to me that he heard me, but it was.
Your opinion is noted, he said coldly.
I stood. Why are you doing this?
Why? He scoffed. He tried to take from me.
I planted myself in front of him.
So you're going to spend your life doing what? Taking down every single person who ever wronged you?
I don't have to explain myself to you.
I blew out of breath and tried a different tactic. I get that your father made you feel powerless, but...
Not another word.
He used his scary voice on me. But it only succeeded in riling me. You can't spend your entire adult life righting the wrongs your father committed. He's already behind bars.
Not anymore.
What? He got out of prison? My voice escalated into dog whistle octaves.
No, he died.
I blinked rapidly and brought a hand to my forehead to stop the hallway from spinning. He died?
Last summer.
Last summer?
You don't need to repeat everything I say,
Lucian pointed out. I rubbed my temples. Why wasn't I notified? His brow furrowed.
Why would you be notified?
Because as a victim of Ansel fucking Rollins, I'm supposed to be alerted every time he's moved or up for parole or fucking dead. Because I testified before the parole board every single time he was up for release to make sure that monster stayed where he belonged. I threw my hands up in the air. What the hell kind of justice is him just dying? Tell me it was at least horrifically painful.
You testified?
His voice was a strangled rasp. Hands reached out and closed around my biceps in a warm, firm grip. Gone was the unflappable Lucian, and in his place was a man on fire. Of course I did. Dad went with me every time. I was worried about going back without him this year, but I would have done it.
No one asked you to do that. It wasn't your responsibility to keep him in there,
he said, still sounding as if he were about to erupt. How did it happen? I asked. He took a deep breath, let it out.
A stroke in his sleep. I'm told it was painless.
The words landed bitterly. Painless. I choked out a humorless laugh. My father had spent his last weeks on Earth suffering, and Ansel Rollins escaped peacefully in his sleep.
Your father didn't tell me you went before the parole board,
Lucian said. Why would he? I asked, pulling out of his grip so I could pace. I thought better when I moved. I can't believe this. They should both be here.
Who?
I stopped my frenetic pacing to look up at him. Our fathers. Mine should be here because he was good and kind and smart and wonderful. He should be here playing with his granddaughter, planning a Mediterranean cruise with Mom, and helping us get Mary Louise out of prison. And that vile excuse for a human being who called himself your father should be here suffering every minute of every day for what he did to you.
And you,
Lucian said quietly. I ignored him and marched into the living room. There, I picked up one of the scratchy throw pillows, held it against my face, and let loose the scream that had been building in my throat.
What the hell are you doing?
He asked, having the audacity to sound almost amused. I tossed the pillow back on the couch. I don't know. It's something Naomi does. I thought it would help.
Did it?
No. I am so enraged right now. You should probably leave.
This is my house,
he pointed out. Fine, I huffed. I'll go break my own stuff until I feel better. I headed for the front door. He caught me just as my hand closed around the doorknob and planted his palm against the door, holding it shut. Back off, Lucian, I hissed without turning around.
Why are you so angry?
He asked. I whirled around to face him. You're kidding me, right?
Sloane,
he said almost gently. I'm angry because he hurt you and your mother. He ruined you, and he gets to just, what, escape it all? Peacefully? Oh, for fuck's sake. One hot, angry tear spilled over and carved a path down my face. He took me by the shoulders.
Don't you dare shed a single tear over him.
Don't you dare tell me how to feel about this.
He didn't ruin me, he insisted. I didn't let him stop me from building this life.
Lucian, what life? My voice cracked.
I have more money and power than...
You have things. You have millions of dollars and acquaintances in high places. You work every waking hour of the day, but none of that made you happy. You rescued the family name so it would never be associated with him, and that's great, but that name ends with you. You got a vasectomy because he made you believe you were damaged. His beautiful face turned to stone.
Not everyone gets to be happy, Sloane.
See? That right there. I shoved a finger in his face. He ruined you. He ruined us. For a second, Lucian looked shell-shocked. He looked as if I'd hit him. And then the mask slid into place again. He released me and took a step back. But now that I'd gotten started, I couldn't stop. I closed the distance between us and said the words I'd been choking on since I was 15. He took a sweet, smart, beautiful boy and made him feel broken. And I will never forgive him for that.
He didn't ruin me. I am who I am in spite of him.
No. You're who you are to spite him, I countered. Every time you make a choice based on what he would or wouldn't do, you're still giving him the power. He's still ruining you. First from prison, and now from the grave. Lucian didn't look happy about my astute assessment. He looked downright pissed. His jaw worked under his pristinely trimmed beard.
Think what you will. But one thing he didn't do was ruin us. You did that on your own.
I sucked in a breath and absorbed the punch of his words. I apologized for that. I was 16.
And how old are you now? Because once again, you didn't trust me to handle my business. You couldn't be trusted then, and you certainly can't be trusted now.
My head was pounding. The pretzel sat like a brick in my stomach. You can't forgive me for that? Well, I can't forgive you for letting Ansel win.
Go the hell home, Sloane.
Gladly. I waltzed out the door and slammed it as hard as I could.
19. Mistakes were made. Lucian, 22 years ago. I woke with a start, the echo of a sound ringing in my ears. I didn't have the luxury of holding my breath and waiting to see if it was the shadows of a dream or if it was the nightmare I actually lived. I was already pulling on a pair of shorts when I heard it again, the shrill plea drowned out by the snarled accusation. Dinner was cold. The house was a mess. There were muddy footprints in the garage. Too loud, too quiet. I'd looked at him wrong. I'd been born. There was a crash, followed immediately by a broken cry from the first floor as my bare feet hit the stairs. They were too loud for this to have just started. I'd fallen asleep. Stupid. I never fell asleep before he did. It wasn't safe. I didn't trust him. But I'd been so fucking tired. Between the last weeks of my senior year, a part-time job, and the pretense of college preparations, I crawled into bed, mine or Sloane's, exhausted. Mr. Walton had done so much for me. He'd helped me apply for and get a scholarship and 2 grants. I wouldn't even have to play football in college. Football had already taken a toll on my body. Football and living with my father. In public, the three of us acted out the same ridiculous farce over and over again, pretending that the darkness didn't exist behind closed doors, that we weren't living the same nightmare over and over again. But no one can hide the truth forever, especially not when it was this ugly. I wasn't going to leave this house, not while my parents shared it. I couldn't. I was the only thing stopping him. I'd been watching him closely, knowing it was going to happen again. The clock had been reset weeks ago with his last violent explosion. I still didn't have the full range of motion back in my shoulder, and my mother had a new scar at the corner of her mouth. She was wasting away before my eyes as if she were erasing herself from reality. I'd wanted to hurt him that time. Not just stop him, but really hurt him that time. I'd wanted to show him what it felt like. But I'd held myself back, barely. I'd thought of Mr. Walton and the chessboard as red had bled in on the edges of my vision. Sometimes the best offense is a good defense. So I'd defended, and then he'd been fine. But I knew he couldn't stay good for long. The man was a ticking time bomb. I knew better, yet I'd still fallen asleep. It was my fucking fault. I flew down the stairs as the sounds of fist against flesh, the dull thud of a body crumpling, and alcohol-fueled shouts tore through the house. I found them in the living room. He stood over her, right hand clenched in an angry fist, bicep bulging, jaw clenched from the rage that ruled him. He'd put on weight while my mother had lost it, almost as if he were sucking the life out of her like one of those vampires in the book Sloane was obsessed with now.
I'm sorry,
Mom whispered brokenly. She was crumpled against the baseboard. Blood from her face smeared the drywall and floor. It soaked into the t-shirt that hung limply off her bony shoulders. He kicked her viciously in the ribs. Stop! The command ripped its way out of my throat. He turned to stare at me with those dead, bloodshot eyes. It's the booze, he'd say, after he'd sobered up. After Mom had bandaged the knuckles he'd bloodied on us. It won't happen again. I hated him. In that moment, time froze, and I was so overwhelmed with hate that my knees threatened to buckle. What did you say to me? He demanded. The words were precise and loaded. He didn't slur when he drank. Everything just got sharper, meaner. I said stop, I repeated, as that familiar haze of red began to appear. My heartbeat thumped at the base of my skull, and I reveled in the adrenaline that dumped into my bloodstream. Lucian, go, Mom pleaded,
now on her hands and knees. He kicked her again without even looking at her. The blow of his boot knocked her back to the floor where she curled into a ball, whimpering. That was when I saw it. The long, jagged cut on her forearm. The glint of metal in his left hand.
You don't ever raise your fucking voice to me in my fucking house, boy, he said.
My eyes were fixed on the knife I'd washed and stowed in the block on the kitchen counter. There was blood on the blade. He'd cut her, and now he was brandishing it at me.
Fuck you!
I shouted. The snap in my head was like a rubber band breaking. I wasn't the dutiful teenage son anymore. I wasn't the peacekeeper or the protector. I was him. A fury like nothing I'd ever felt before propelled me across the room. My hands fisted in his sweaty t-shirt. They looked like his. Big, bruising, capable of destruction. It stuck in my head, lodged there like a jagged stone. He seemed distantly surprised, because I knew my place. I didn't fight back. But tonight I did. Tonight it ended before he ended one of us. I used his surprise to my advantage and threw him bodily into the wall he'd pinned me and my mother against countless times. My fist flew and connected with his concrete jaw. Pain exploded distantly. I could hear my mother screaming from far away. He was shouting now, horrible, disgusting abuse. The kinds of things you saved up for the enemy who took everything from you. Not the son who'd once only wanted to make you proud. He slashed at me with the blade, but I felt nothing except a burning anger that would never be quenched. A need to destroy. It felt so good to finally unleash it all back on him. Fresh pain fueled me. I snatched the knife out of his hand and threw it to the floor. His fist caught me in the temple and everything went sideways. But I didn't crumple. I didn't fall or beg or cry. I snapped. I wouldn't stop until he fell, until he begged, he cried, like father, like son. I heard it in my head like a mantra on repeat, over and over again, over the faraway sound of breaking glass, like father, like son, over my mother's low wail, like father, like son. I kept going. Kept swinging, kept dodging his fists, kept going even as my head rang, even as the red changed and became blue and white and then red again.
Sloan. My hands shook as I clutched the cordless phone in them. I wanted to cry or throw up, and before this was over, I was fairly sure I'd do both. I'd made Lucian a promise. He'd been adamant. But if I didn't do something, someone was going to get hurt. Really hurt. I'd seen Mr. Rollins come home, the fuel door on his truck still open. He'd swerved into the wrong lane, then back again to avoid Mrs. Clemson walking her two St. Bernards. Shouting profanities at the woman, he'd hit the gas too hard and then slammed on the brakes, stopping mere inches from his own garage door. There had been so many times over the last year that I wanted to tell my parents, but Lucian had made me promise. I was to stay out of it and let him handle it. He never talked about it, but I knew enough to watch for the signs. I always left my window unlocked, but on the bad nights I left it open an inch or two and huddled under a blanket on the window seat listening. Since I couldn't stop it from happening, I could at least suffer through it with him. We were so close in some ways, and yet practically strangers in others. There was the Lucian I saw at school, the beautiful boy with the entourage, the one who'd wink at me or give my ponytail a tug when no one else was looking. Then there was the Lucian who had dinner three nights a week at my parents' table, polite, respectful, quiet. The one who'd volunteered to teach me to drive in the high school parking lot on Sundays after my mom said her blood pressure couldn't take it. And there was the Lucian who climbed through my window. He was funny and broody and smart and interested in me. We argued for hours over music and movies and books. Sometimes he read what I was reading just so we could talk about it.
He'd even coached me through my first real relationship with Trevor Whitmer, a sophomore trombone player with an in-ground pool. It was June. Lucian's 18th birthday was coming up on Tuesday, the same day as his high school graduation. It felt like a ticking clock was hanging over our heads. He was going through the motions of a graduating senior, summer plans and college t-shirts. But no matter how many times I tried to pin him down about it, he wouldn't open up. Sometimes it seemed like he wanted to know everything about me without giving up anything of himself. I heard another faint shout carried on the night air and cringed, clutching the phone to my chest. Lucian almost always came over after the fight, after his father had passed out or left again, after his mother had been soothed. There was no one to look out for him, so I stocked bandages and Neosporin in my nightstand. Sometimes I snuck downstairs to throw ice cubes in a baggie or to forage for snacks. He trusted me enough to tell me. Maybe that meant he also trusted me to do what was right, even if it was something he didn't want, I rationalized. I chewed nervously on my lip. I couldn't just sit here in my pretty room with my pretty life and wait for his father to stop hurting him. That wasn't what friends did. That wasn't what you did when you loved someone. And I loved Lucian. In what way, I wasn't sure. I just knew that I loved him, and I couldn't stand to see him hurt anymore. I shoved the window up and climbed out onto the porch roof. It was almost midnight. My parents would have been asleep for hours, and I couldn't very well go running into their room, blurt out the whole story, and then ask them to call 911, could I? To be fair, my parents were pretty great. They'd call 911, and my dad would run next door and try to calm things down. I could appreciate the need for de-escalation every once in a while. But Mr. Rollins seemed like the kind of guy who wouldn't even let you finish your first sentence before decking you, and I didn't want my dad to get hurt. Besides, he'd be crushed if he found out what was happening next door. He and Mom would feel guilty that they hadn't seen the signs, and they'd try to make up for it somehow, which would only embarrass Lucian and make him start avoiding me. I hated Mr. Rollins with the kind of dedicated passion that only great works of fiction seemed to capture. Every time I saw him, I glared my hate into him, willing him to feel it, to turn around and find me shooting poisoned eye daggers at him, to know that he hadn't fooled everyone, that I knew his dirty little secret. But he never noticed me, never once glanced in my direction. It was better that way, I supposed. Then, when I put my plan into action, he'd have no idea that I'd played a role in his karma. I had a lot of plans, a whole notebook of them. Ways to get Mr. Rollins arrested so Lucian can go to college. I'd written that in big block print with my favorite purple highlighter on the first page. On the outside of the notebook, I'd scrawled geography notes, so no one would get snoopy. The last plan I'd sketched out skipped the get arrested part and went straight to the murder him part. I'd noticed Mr. Rollins changing the brake pads on his truck in the driveway every few months, probably because he was a drunk and constantly slamming on the brakes to avoid hitting things. I'd thought about sneaking over there while he was under the vehicle and taking the parking brake off. Then I'd wait until I was sure he'd been crushed before I'd call 911 with a quaver in my voice. The more realistic plans that didn't involve me committing a homicide, no matter how much he deserved to have his face murdered, centered around drawing the attention of an independent witness, like Lucian's football coach, who had to wonder about the bruises, or maybe the neighbors who lived on the other side of the Rollins family. Except Mr. Clemson had a hearing aid that he rarely used, and Mrs. Clemson was so busy talking she never seemed to hear anyone else. I was going to figure it out, and I was going to make him stop. Then Lucian could go to college and not have to worry about his mom, and he'd be happy. Like, really happy.
A muffled shout startled me. It was followed by the sound of breaking glass. Loud breaking glass. As in their living room window, I guessed. My thumbs punched 911 before I'd even fully made the decision. A sob broke the eerie silence, and I realized it had come from me. I was shaking so hard my teeth were chattering. One of us had to end this tonight, and if it meant he'd hate me for the rest of his life, at least he'd have the rest of his life. 911, what is your emergency?
There's a man hurting his wife and son. It sounds bad. Please send help before it's too late.
My voice broke. Okay, honey, the operator said in a softer tone. It's gonna be all right. What's the address? It took me 2 tries to get it out between sobs. I've got officers on the way right now.
Tell them to hurry up and to be careful. Mr. Rollins is a big guy and he drinks all the time and he drives drunk, I said, spewing out the list of reasons why I hated the man.
Okay, the police will take care of this, he promised.
Thank you, I whispered, wiping my eyes on my sleeve.
It was cold up here on the roof. Cold and lonely, waiting for Lucian to be okay. Are these your neighbors? The operator asked. I could hear sirens in the far-off distance and willed them closer.
He's my friend, I whispered.
Lucian. The handcuffs bit into my wrists. Broken glass cut the soles of my feet as Wiley Ogden marched me out the front door. Blood coursed from a 12 cuts on my face and arms. My father had managed to carve a shallow slice over my ribs with the knife before I'd taken it from him. My head hurt, and I was having trouble paying attention to what people were saying. Everything was blurry and muffled. There were 2 patrol cars on the street in front of the house and an ambulance parked in the driveway. All 3 vehicles had their lights on, alerting everyone in the neighborhood to my shame. There was a small contingent of concerned neighbors in bathrobes.
What are you doing?
Simon Walton marched toward me, fire in his eyes and cats on his pajama pants. I looked away, not wanting to see the judgment in the eyes of the man I'd come to think of as a surrogate father. But it wasn't me his ire was directed at. He stepped between me and the chief of police and drilled a finger into Ogden's flabby chest.
Just what the hell do you think you're doing, Wiley?
I'm arresting this punk prick for trying to cut his parents to ribbons with a chef's knife, the chief said loud enough for the neighbors to hear.
That's not what happened.
The crowd parted, or my vision cleared long enough to bring Sloane into focus. I looked away quickly, but not before seeing her tear-streaked face, the horror, the guilt. She was still holding the cordless phone. It was her. She'd called them. She was the reason my life was over. The reason my mother was unprotected. My mother, who had remained silent when my father told the cops I'd attacked them unprovoked. A wave of nausea rolled through me. Sloane, I'll handle this, Mr. Walton insisted. Uncuff him now, Wiley, or we're going to have an issue.
I don't take orders from some namby-pamby ambulance chaser, Ogden said, giving me a hard shove forward.
My knees buckled, and I went down on them hard on the sidewalk. Sloane cried out, but I refused to look up.
Officer Winslow, will you please take care of Lucian while I talk to Chief Ogden?
Mr. Walton said through clenched teeth. Another cop and an EMT each took an arm and helped me up.
Hang in there, buddy,
the officer said to me quietly as they guided me toward the ambulance.
Don't bother patching him up. Let him bleed on the way to jail. See how he likes it,
Ogden called after them. I thought I heard the EMT mutter, fucker, under his breath, but I wasn't sure. The cop eased me into the back of the patrol car, where I collapsed against the seat.
I'll get you some water, and we'll clean you up down at the station, he promised.
I nodded, but didn't open my eyes. There was no point. There was nothing left for me here. This life was over.
Lucian.
I managed to open my eyes and found Mr. Walton leaning in the open door.
Listen to me. I'll be right behind you, okay?
don't talk to anyone. If they try to question you, tell them you won't speak unless your lawyer is present. His tone was calm, soothing.
What?
My voice sounded rusty, and I cleared my throat.
What about my mom?
I rasped. They're taking her to the hospital to get her checked out, he said, keeping his voice low.
Lucian.
Sloane's panicked face appeared next to her father's earnest one. I turned away, not wanting to see her, not wanting to face the betrayal or the shadows my family had put in those green eyes.
Go,
I said.
What?
Mr. Walton asked, leaning closer.
Get her out of here, please.
Lucian, I'm sorry,
Sloane began. Go stand with your mother, Sloane, Mr. Walton said, using his lawyer voice. My father was standing guard at the back of the ambulance watching me. I knew what he was really doing, reminding my mother what happened to wives who didn't know their loyalty lay with their husbands instead of their sons. I didn't blame her. I didn't even know if I blamed Sloane. I just knew that everything I'd fought for so long was now over. It was all for nothing. I was going to jail. My father would kill my mother. Then he'd either go to jail or drink himself to death. No matter which way the dice landed, this was the end of the Rollins family.
But Dad, you can't let them take him. It wasn't him. It wasn't Lucian's fault. Mr. Rollins...
If he heard her, if he even had an inkling that she knew, I wouldn't be there to stop him. I felt sick.
Enough!
I barked sharply. I still couldn't look at her. She needed to get away from me.
Lucian?
Sloane's whisper was broken. Go wait with your mother, Mr. Walton ordered briskly. I sensed her leaving. A wave of hopelessness crashed over me.
You don't want to get involved in this, Mr. Walton. It's not safe.
He reached in the car and put his hand on my shoulder.
We're not abandoning you, Lucian. You're a good kid on your way to being a good man. I'm going to fix this.
On the way to the police station, I found myself wondering why some people dedicated their lives to fixing things while others set out only to break them. Not that it mattered anymore. I was one of the broken. 20. No one else can have her. Lucian. Maureen Fitzgerald crossed her long legs at the ankles and smiled her enigmatic smile at me.
What's so important that you insisted I cut my Parisian shopping spree short?
Her tone was well modulated. Her posture and diction served to remind her audience of private boarding schools and summers in Europe. Not a single chestnut hair dared escape from the classic twist. Her jewelry was expensive yet tasteful, and her tailored pantsuit exuded both style and money. But I knew better. The real Maureen was more impressive than some daddy's girl with an inheritance. Like me, she'd created herself out of the nothing she'd been given. Also like me, she'd built a safety net of money, power, and favors. In her 50s, she managed to turn more heads walking into a room than most of her employees, which was quite the statement given the fact that she was in charge of a bevy of beautiful sex workers who kept the wealthy Washington, D.C. elite satisfied. I handed her an espresso on a delicate saucer and took a seat on the edge of the desk I'd commandeered. The hotel manager was outside, probably nervously pacing and wondering why the man who owned this place and signed her paycheck was using her office to meet with the most notorious madam on the East Coast. I need information, I said.
Don't be greedy, Lucian. It's unbecoming.
Don't pretend you feed me out of the generosity of your heart, Maureen. I've made your life easier in a number of ways. It was a symbiotic relationship we shared. She divulged information on any problematic clients her workers encountered, and I used the information to make sure there were no further problems. Depending on the individual in question, my tools ran the gamut from blackmail to sometimes more creative means.
Sooner or later, someone could draw a connection between us, and then where will we be?
She asked before taking a delicate sip of espresso. We're both too cagey for that.
How very optimistic of you, but people get distracted. They get sloppy.
Is that why your name came up in connection to Felix Metzer's untimely demise? I asked, dropping the information like a dead body at her feet. Her face remained perfectly impassive, but I didn't miss the rattle of china when she set her cup down.
Who have you been talking to?
Someone you're lucky enough is too stupid to connect any dots. He assumed Felix was a client.
What a limited imagination your little birdie has,
Maureen said, patting her hair. Why were you seen having lunch with a man who was, by all accounts, a likable, networking, criminal middleman until his body was fished out of the Potomac? She sighed.
First, tell me why you're involved.
Felix sold a list with my friend's name on it to Anthony Hugo. Hugo made it known that every name on the list needed to be eliminated.
You have friends?
She arched an eyebrow, her brown eyes sparkling. More like family, I said.
Then you already understand.
Understand what?
Felix is, or was, family. We were cousins in what feels like a past life. We grew up together. I went my way, he went his. But we stayed in touch, met up on occasion. Never anywhere that someone would recognize me, of course. I have a reputation to uphold.
Except someone had recognized her, and now Maureen was my only lead. Did Felix ever talk to you about work?
We thought it best not to discuss our professions, plausible deniability and all that.
But you would have looked out for him. You would have had an idea of the company he was keeping, I pressed. Maureen was a caretaker at heart and a guard dog when necessary.
Why are you focusing on Felix and not Hugo?
Lord knows that man has broken enough laws to earn a few lifetime sentences in prison. Someone who wasn't Hugo put my friend's name on that list for reasons I want to know. That person needs to pay.
Sounds like someone had a vendetta against your friend.
I need to know who. Even if Anthony Hugo finally went down for his crimes, there was still someone out there who thought of Nash Morgan as a threat, and I wouldn't rest until I had them. Maureen studied her pale pink nails.
As I said, we didn't discuss business.
That's never stopped you from acquiring information before. She inhaled deeply.
Fine. Not all of Felix's friends were on the wrong side of the law. Some of them at least worked on the right side.
A cop? I asked.
There was a gentleman, and I use that term loosely.
She glanced at her discreet Cartier timepiece.
He showed up at a family backyard cookout this summer. I wasn't there, of course. My aunt mentioned that Felix's cop acquaintance made quite the little show of introducing himself around as Felix's old friend. It rattled my cousin, which was not an easy thing to accomplish.
So you looked into him?
Someone gets that close to my family, and I will do what's necessary.
Name, I demanded. She lifted her slim shoulders.
It won't do you any good in this case, seeing as the man was shot and killed after an abduction gone wrong last year.
I swore under my breath. Tate Dilton.
Very good,
Maureen said, impressed. I shoved a hand through my hair. Did it really all lead back to him? Did all these loose ends tie up with Dilton's corpse? The man had a grudge against Nash for taking Ogden's position as chief of police. But Dilton had been the trigger man the night Nash was shot. Why would he have put Nash on an elimination list, a coward's move, if he was going to be the one to shoot him anyway?
According to my digging, he wasn't the brightest crooked cop on the payroll,
Maureen said.
I warned Felix to stay away from him, but he obviously didn't listen.
If this was true, I'd wasted the last weeks chasing down a fucking ghost.
I see this news isn't exactly welcome, she noted. But I'm afraid I don't have time to stick around to find out why. I have a previous engagement.
I'm sorry for cutting your trip short, I said gruffly, walking her to the door. She gave me a peck on the cheek.
Time spent with you is never wasted, Lucian. But you do owe me a very nice gift. I'm thinking something from Hermes.
My lips twitched. Maureen had a maternal fondness for me. We said our goodbyes, and Maureen left through the private elevator to the parking garage. I thanked the manager for allowing me to commandeer her office,
then headed for the marble lobby. It was the Saturday before Valentine's Day, and the self-important murmur of DC's young and elite nearly drowned out the live piano music in the bar. I'd been one of them once. Now, I was something wholly different. Everyone was either a pawn or a king. The pawns wanted to grow up to be kings, and the kings missed the innocence of being a pawn. He ruined you. He ruined us. Sloane's words from the previous weekend echoed in my head. She didn't know what she was talking about. She didn't know me. She certainly wasn't in any position to judge me. I'd meant what I said. Happiness wasn't for everyone. I preferred security. I'd built a life that was impervious to any threats.
How'd it go, boss?
Nolan leaned casually against the concierge desk, his fingers in the bowl of mints. What are you doing here? I demanded. A raucous burst of male laughter rang out from the bar. Nolan straightened from the desk.
A little bird of prey named Petula told me you had an important after-hours meeting. And after that tail you had to shake and Holly's trouble, I figured you might want some backup, at least until I saw Maureen Fitzgerald walk out of here on a security monitor a minute ago.
Spying on your employer isn't generally a smart business move, I pointed out.
Eh, you say spying, I say having your back.
He unwrapped a mint and popped it into his mouth.
Did the lovely madam have any information on our deceased pal Felix?
I scanned the lobby. It was crowded with well-dressed, well-funded people certain of their importance, men and women who spent their days chasing power or catering to it. I nodded in the direction of the bar.
Don't have to ask me twice, Nolan said and followed me.
Forest green walls, dark wood, and paintings of hunts on the English countryside made the bar feel like an old-money country estate library. We created a space for ourselves at the end of the mahogany bar, where we were sheltered from prying eyes and ears by a thickly carved column. I caught the eye of the bartender and held up two fingers. He nodded,